All right, we're just going to start here. We do not have quorum yet, but when we do, I'm just going to pause and we'll be able to take care of that business first. Welcome, Chair Davids. If you want to present your bill, House File 79.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. House File 79 is a bill that would have bonding authority for a veterans home in Fillmore County. It's not specific to any city, but it would be in Fillmore County. We had a very comprehensive hearing in the Veterans Committee on the policy part. And, of course, this is some money issues here. We're looking at $10 million in bonds from the bonding committee. And, of course, the reason, as you know, it affects this committee is because there would be operating funds that would be needed down the road. Now, if everything was passed today, signed in law by the governor today, this is a project that probably wouldn't actually start until 2021. So there's going to be some interesting discussions on operating funding when it goes outside of our budget years. So that being said, members, this is a bill to go to bonding committee for $10 million for bonding for a veterans home in Fillmore County. All the need studies and everything have been done. So we have the numbers that the need is there. And if you look at the state of Minnesota geographically, in the southwest you have Laverne. In the northwest, what do we have, Fergus Falls? Silver Bay in the northeast. And then you have the metro area covered. So there's a real glaring hole if you just look at a map in southeastern Minnesota as far as veterans homes. So, but that's one issue. The other issue is there's three of them out there. We're talking about Montevideo, Bemidji, in Fillmore County. And, of course, I believe that with limited beds available, that we will need to look at the numbers and wherever the best numbers are for need. It'd be my thought that that's where it should go. But so just so the committee knows, there's three cities in the running right now. Two of them are in one bill, and then House File 79 has the Fillmore County. So that's the bill. That's what we're doing. We'd like to get over to bonding. The beds would be adjusted. I think we're looking at 72 beds, which would probably be taken care of over in bonding, because there's 144 beds, I think, available statewide. And so this would take about half of them at 72 beds. I think the bill says up to 140 beds. That will need to be changed over in the bonding committee for that. So that's the bill. I have Mr. Jason Marcourt, the Fillmore County Veterans Services Officer here, who did quite a bit of testifying in the Veterans Committee, but he's here today as a resource in case members would have questions of him. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we do have quorum right now, and so I'm going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order. If Representative Uglin wants to move the minutes for March 15th.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. I'll move those minutes.
Representative Uglin moves the minutes for March 15th. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the minutes are adopted. Chair Davids, and I don't know if this is for Mr. Marcourt, the one question that I have is, have the local nursing homes in Fillmore County that serve the general population, have they expressed any concerns about this? Do you have any shortages of nursing staff, people to be able to supply the veterans home if it were to be built?
A very good question, and I have talked to several nursing homes. We have one nursing home that does have beds for veterans currently that is certified for, but that's very, very limited. I have talked to several of the nursing homes, and, of course, there are concerns there. And of course, with Fillmore County, we have, with a home like this coming in, we have quite a few folks to draw from that are very near because we have Rochester there. And so there's many, many trained professionals in southeastern Minnesota, especially being so close to Olmsted County and the city of Rochester. So there has been some concern, but I know they haven't come out publicly or anything because a lot of the folks there are supportive. But there has been some concerns about labor. But we're very fortunate with all of the medical staff in Olmsted County, and a facility like this would draw some to the VA home.
Okay. All right. Members, any other questions? Is there anybody from the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? All right. I would like to do this if we could get this done, but I want to check with Representative Johnson. Representative Johnson, we do have this bill formally in our possession. Are you okay if we move this today rather than tomorrow? Great. So I'm going to move House File 79 be referred to the Committee on Bonding without recommendation. Members, all unless Chair Davids, do you have final comments you want to make?
That's wonderful. I appreciate your support to get over to bonding.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The bill moves forward. Thank you, Chair Davids, and thank you, Mr. Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And Representative Johnson, thank
you. All right. Jim, you want to do it? Okay. Representative Nash moves House File 2138 be laid over for possible inclusion in the State Government Finance Bill. Representative Nash, to your bill.
Good afternoon, committee members. That time has come where you know that I ask all sorts of incessant questions about IT in minute, and here we go. There's a bill to address some of this. And let me start off by saying that the idea of minute is exactly correct. Consolidating IT the way it was done was the right move to consolidate from 77 to hopefully a much smaller number, and this bill helps accelerate some of that. I'd say that minute is sort of in that awkward teenage phase, and it needs a little bit of parental guidance to move it along, to make it take a shower every day, and do the things that it needs to do. We've got to consolidate further. This bill has some fairly aggressive goals. I wrote the bill, and then Mr. Oman came to my office, and we talked through it. And these are aggressive goals, but they are achievable, and that's the important thing that we talk about. And there are savings that are going to be realized within the biennium and then also long term, and I will go through the goals and we will then talk through the bill from there. But so we've heard a lot about the fact that we've got currently 27, and I'm going to put air quotes, data centers. Some of these are actually machines in a closet. That's a really bad IT practice, and I don't think any of us would disagree with that. And the goal of the bill is to consolidate down into 6 hardened, secured data centers, which is, from my professional opinion in the IT world, exactly what needs to be done to protect the data of the people of Minnesota. It is absolutely critical that we get that done. So the goal of that is to consolidate down into 6 data centers by the end of the biennium. Again, it is an aggressive goal, but Mr. Oman and the Minute team have agreed that it is achievable. The next section in Subdivision 2, we're going to talk about some things that maybe definition-wise people cloud over, and the word cloud is the reason that you're going to cloud over, but we're trying to migrate 25% of all state agency servers onto a public cloud solution and store at least 35% of all state agency data on a public cloud solution. So let me make that maybe a little easier to understand. We're taking those goals from physical gear that sits on a floor somewhere, and we're moving it into a cloud solution. And I think we've talked to Amazon and some other providers. There are public cloud providers out there that are infinitely cheaper than having gear on a floor in a room in a building that is maybe or maybe not protected particularly well. And if I could, Mr. Gehring, I need to make a small oral amendment on Subdivision 3. It happened maybe a little bit in drafting. On line 2.24, I would prefer that it read, "Officer shall reduce the Office of Minute IT Enterprise Services total cost," instead of just Minute Services. It needs to be Enterprise Services. It's a pretty small change that was we missed that in drafting, and I would ask to have that that amendment incorporated.
Mr. Gehring, can you repeat the amendment, please?
And I can have Mr. Oman describe the nuanced difference if you would prefer that that be done.
Let's first have Mr. Gehring repeat.
Very well.
Madam Chair, I actually would maybe defer to Mr. Oman just to clarify, is that a specific division of Minute that we're referring to, or is there some other organization that we would...
So there are certain...
Mr. Oman.
Sorry. Jesse Oman, for the record, deputy with Minute. Madam Chair, member.
So there are, and I've talked about this before, really two different elements to Minute and how it provides its services. There are certain ones that we are trying to be able to provide the same and gain economy of scale by bringing together. And that's when you hear enterprise services, that's really referring to those type of IT services. Data center, network, help desk, workstation, desktop, those types of things. When you hear a reference to more local services, that is then what's uniquely delivered to each of the agencies themselves. So that adjustment is more referring to just then those enterprise services that we're bringing together.
Mr. Gehring?
So, Madam Chair, then with that explanation, I think what I would suggest is on 2.24, you keep the reference to Office of Minute Services, so we've got the correct agency reference, but then insert enterprise services before personnel. So the way the sentence would read is, no later than June 30, 2019, the State Chief Information Officer shall reduce the Office of Minute Services total cost for enterprise services personnel by at least $3 million.
Representative Nash?
Madam Chair, members, I believe that accomplishes what we needed to accomplish.
Okay. Members, any questions on that amendment? All right. Representative Ublin?
To the author, Representative Nash, so does this include outsourcing services and personnel, or just what's the scope?
Mr. Ullman?
So how I understand the bill on this, and at least how I'm reading it, and I always refer to the author for the original intent, is this is a reduction in staff costs on those enterprise services or those who support them.
Madam Chair, that's exactly correct.
There are other elements, though, then when you talk cloud, that is now, instead of us having physical hardware, that is talking about using a outsource or a private industry partner to perform those services, though still overall under the umbrella of Minute.
Okay. Members, any other questions? All right. Representative Nash renews his motion that House on page 2, line 24, it should read Office of Minute Services total cost for enterprise services personnel. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Nash, further comments to your bill?
Madam Chair, back to subdivision 4, legislative report of application consolidation. You heard Minute and Mr. Ullman testify here before the committee that we have, I think it's 3,800 applications currently, and plus or minus, and what this is asking is that there is a report created, and from that report there's going to be a long-term consolidation effort so that once we shrink, reduce, and then look at duplicative applications, that those will eventually be, once the report is generated, migrated away, because those are not going to be either kept moving forward or eliminated, because really there's a better application or better offer that exists. And that is where a lot of the savings that we're going to have as a result of labor savings is also going to come from. Applications are going to be stood down, and many of the employees that we're no longer going to need are going to be nearing retirement and may just no longer, their services may not be needed any further because that application is gone. So that is that piece. And with that piece is the bill.
Okay. Mr. Ullman, so what agencies have not consolidated so far?
Madam Chair, all agencies have consolidated in that they are under the umbrella of Minute. But what we're really talking about is expediting or moving in agencies into these enterprise services to gain that economy of scale. You know, just off the top of my head, I'm sorry, I don't want to misspeak which ones those are. Can I get you a list on that? We are working on a wave one and a wave two, but then there is a group that we haven't yet moved to that. I know those that we've not yet planned to fully bring in the enterprise services are like DOT, DNR. Again, I just want to make sure that I'd be getting you an exact, accurate list of what that plan is. If we remember the ones that when I came and presented before, there was a dashboard from the OSO project. I think that was included in your handouts that actually had what agencies were in Wave 1, Wave 2, as well as what we'd call future waves for each of those enterprise services. I know that was detailed out there if members still have that artifact.
Okay. Members, any questions so far? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of a follow-up clarification where we're asking for performance outcomes required and reports. Do we have a time frame where the agency or will revisit this bill to see how it's actually rolling out? What are we receiving the benefits that we're hoping for? Are the reductions in employee FTEs particularly, is that accomplishing what we needed to in a way that not only saves money but actually accomplishes the goals of consolidating and improving the effectiveness of what we're doing?
Mr. Ullman.
So, Madam Chair, members, maybe I can take a step back, and I know usually you'd say, are there more comments on this? If you don't mind, let me step back a half a step, and then I'll get to your question if that's okay. I'd like to start off by saying, yes, and it has obviously been the discussion of a lot of conversation with certain individuals, at times very spirited. And I do appreciate we've had some very good conversations, and generally a lot of what this bill outlines aligns with what our strategy is and what we're trying to do. One of my concerns, though, is that it is at times overly prescriptive and specific to an agency's tactic and strategies and maybe doesn't allow that flexibility as we dig into it and are trying to get to the numbers. I mean, I will tell you we're very excited about moving more to cloud hosting. It offers a element of elasticity, which is the ability to quickly go up and down, that I think is going to be a great lever for our partners. But we're also dealing with challenges of a lot of legacy applications and at times some requirements by certain agencies that make it challenging to always directly be able to map out what can and can't. For example, there are rules around FBI data. You'll often hear this referred to as CJIS requirements, as well as IRS PUP 1075 that make that challenging to be able to do. I also would say that while we're certainly trying to move in all these directions, again, just setting that hard of line means we don't have a lot of flexibility to be able to do this. Again, I think that we've already started to see some of the salary savings in the economy of scale in these enterprise services. This target is a tough one. It's going to be a hard one, require a lot of push, and we just haven't mapped some of that out and been able to do that. Again, I would say, you know, with the intent of going down to 6 data centers from 27, obviously that's Minute's plan. You actually see that in the governor's budget as part of our security ask. It has a lot of those good security implications around that, and that's certainly something we want to do, which is why you'll see that that amount that we have in that security ask is also the exact same amount that appears in this bill. Obviously, we wouldn't need both, but that is a plan of ours. So we are supportive of that. We see the benefit of that from not only a security perspective but the economy of scale. But we had to carry that in both this fiscal note as well as what you see there just to have them stand alone. Now, to your question is, are we going to be able to measure and see some of these? I think between a number of the reports that we have here, one being able to really have the graph of number of data centers. Pretty easy to be able to say we went from this number down to this number. Some of the other reports in here that I think we've had a good start on, though I will say the bill is going to be a stretch that we have to add certain elements to, both the project report as well as the application. I think we'll detail where we're at in those respects as well. And then some of the other ones, it's a prescriptive percentage that I think we could measure, but those are metrics we're going to have to put in place. So, again, overall strategy, overall vision, this really does align up a lot with what Minute has. It just is pretty prescriptive on certain percentages, and it's hard for us to peer that far in the future at times and really make sure there's not going to be an obstacle that we hit at that point.
And, Madam Chair, if I could.
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair and Representative Ward, I dealt with this from a professional perspective and reached out to a lot of the peers that I have in my world, which is the same as Mr. Oman's world. We just work for a different type of organization and made sure that the requirements that we put into the bill were actually achievable. Mr. Oman did come to my office, and he said, yes, they are achievable. It will require some effort. But to that end, the goal of the bill is to deliver to the people of the state of Minnesota a service that when the bill was passed many years ago, that this was the original vision. This was the law that was passed, that these agencies would be fully consolidated. And like I mentioned in my intro, we sort of need to nudge it along a little bit in order for it to truly achieve its initial purpose. And while I would say Mr. Oman is a colleague of mine, this is where we say, well, gosh, you know, Jim, this is kind of a heavy lift. We can do it, but this is kind of a heavy lift. But yeah. But it is achievable, and that's the thing that I want to make sure is that Mr. Oman isn't disagreeing that this isn't achievable. It's just going to mean that we have to work hard, and you know I have the utmost faith in him and Mr. Baden and Mr. Boozy and the storage staff. I mean, they all are very competent professionals. This is achievable, and that is why I wrote the bill, so it isn't you have to get this done by the end of next week because that would be ridiculous. But by the end of the biennium, we're going to be able to capture savings as a result of consolidation. When we do those application changeovers, some of those are just simply going to go away. And it is 100% intuitive that if something goes away, you're not going to be paying for it anymore, and there's savings to be captured there. But it's an excellent question.
Representative Ward. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to clarify, so in a year, we can come back and just see how things are going, rather than waiting 2 years. And to your comment about, so that was the question, but to your comment about, yes, it's been years in the making of this. But as you said that, I was imagining all of the agencies that we're talking about, mm-hmm. and the inertia of all of these groups having trouble accommodating the demands. So just understanding human nature, and this is the way we've done it, and somebody's making us change, we do need to nudge them along, absolutely. And I'm glad that you're able to do that and have an agreement that it's doable. We all need to be stretched. And I think that the delays have been pretty much probably human nature kinds of things, resistance to change. And so I'm glad to see this moving forward. I just want us to be sure that we can do some checks once in a while and not get 2 years down the road and say, well, we overestimated our capacity or we, you know, just can we refine it in a year?
Representative Wong.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I noticed the empty chair of a member that normally asks the questions for a minute. So I have a short question for the author. My understanding that Azure, IBM, Amazon, the ones that have the external cloud opportunities, have integrated security, and that the advantage you have, because they have multiple customers and multiple government entity customers, that if there is an intrusion or security risk that pops up, that they would address it, and that way we might possibly more quickly address and help with our security. So are they integrated with their security support?
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, the public...
sorry.
I'll give Representative Lilly a minute.
I'm sorry, sir.
The public cloud providers do take that on themselves, yes. And if Mr. Oman would like to expound.
Mr. Oman.
Madam Chair, members, there is certain elements they have there, though depending on some of the requirements we have, there are additional things we need to make sure that are in place with the transmission, both from here locally going forward. If we want to dive deeper into that area, I can bring, okay.
Yeah. Madam Chair, we could talk about API layers and different things like that, and nobody other than a handful of us will actually be interested or even stay awake for that conversation, so maybe we could do that offline.
Representative Quam? Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Oman, when you're here testifying before with NIT, I remember you saying your top priority was cybersecurity, and your second priority I wrote down was consolidation of data centers, although there doesn't sound like they're mutually exclusive. So I'm interested in your comments on cybersecurity as it relates to the performance outcomes required, where that shouldn't be part of the deal as well. I guess to Representative Nash, I think your bill is headed in the right direction, but I'm just curious why you don't, two questions, why you don't add that on there, the cybersecurity component, and then secondly, are you going to fight hard for the money to pay for this? Because if it's just an unfunded mandate, then it's kind of not without much strength other than a nice proposal out there. But anyway, it's going to cost. I saw the fiscal note, and I think that's accurate, you know, $14 million or whatever to consolidate. So,
Madam
first,
Chair.
I'm sorry.
Sure.
So two questions for you, and then I'd be curious to Deputy Commissioner's response on the cybersecurity aspect. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, the cybersecurity piece is very important. We have 27 data centers that are, and that's a huge liability. They're not particularly secure. Mm-hmm. The surface area for attack for those data centers is massive, and there's a cost. There's an element of exposure which is cost. So consolidation not only will reduce the risk that we have there, but it's also going to reduce the operational cost. So, again, respectfully, you just don't reduce things and then say, well, that's a nice proposal because, you know, it costs money. We're going to be saving money long term. And I think that the fiscal note we got literally minutes ago before we, you know, earlier this morning, I do have some questions about some of the things that were predicated to go into the fiscal notes because it doesn't address any of the reflected costs long-term. And there really are long-term costs. You know, migrating to the cloud for both data and server, that's a huge savings there. Reducing labor, huge savings there. Eventually migrating off applications, that is another long-term savings. So it is something that is exceptionally important, and from a private sector IT person's perspective, This is done every day in the private world, and there are savings. And that's why my question regarding the fiscal note, because it doesn't really reflect any of the accrued savings. So I think that there's probably something that we need to go back and look at as it relates to the fiscal note, because as you read, there are no savings reflected there, but there are, and you heard Mr. Oman say, that there are going to be savings. So I just have some confusion as it relates to that, and I think some of it, again, may be that you've got a couple of nerds writing bills, and people in MMB may not understand some of the bigger implications as it relates to that. So I'm happy to work with them to help them better understand what it is that we're trying to achieve, because I don't know that we have that same parity on the other side. So,
Mr. Oman?
Madam Chair, members, you're right in that this is actually part of our security ask. When you say number one priority is security, there was really two elements in the governor's budget and the bill as it relates just to the minute ask. You know, and again, not going into all the applications that we have challenges with, but just that minute ask. One was around the consolidation of the data centers, and that's why we are generally supportive of the direction of this bill here, because it does align with a lot of what we look to do. and that reducing the attack vector from 27 down to 6 not only reduces how much can be attacked and gets us out of some data centers that aren't secure, but it also means the second part of that security ask, which is really to up the tools that we have, doesn't need to cover 27. It can now cover that smaller amount there. So really we do look at it that there's a part here that really is picking up on and aligning very closely with that part of the security ask, again, which is why you'll hear me say there's a lot of support there. Our concern is just the prescriptive nature of it, the very exact amounts, not allowing some of that natural discovery that may happen as we bring this together to know what exactly we're hit. Maybe it's 25% in the cloud. Maybe we can't do that because of requirements of the age of the apps. Maybe it's 35%. Just having that prescriptive is just challenging for us from that nature and the flexibility of it. But from the security aspect, this does accomplish that similar. And, again, you'll actually see that dollar amount matching up exactly with the other side in the governor's budget as well.
And, Madam Chair, just briefly to Mr. Oman's last comment, that's why we wrote it so that it is at least a X percent in the cloud. They may find the ability to migrate more to the cloud. So while it may be described as somewhat prescriptive, again, these were goals that were agreed that could be done, and if they find more, then that's great.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just looking at the fiscal note and reviewing this information before, I mean, it just seems like there's some startup costs in terms of the hardware, software, and professional services to facilitate the consolidation that are pretty fundamental needs that need to occur from that perspective. But I do agree there's going to be long-term savings, and that's kind of the point of the whole thing, I guess, and we'll see that. I'm not sure if that's going to take away from the initial startup costs. Again, I think you're heading in the right direction. My concern, of course, is backing it up with the funding needed and probably a little bit to add to the performance outcomes required. Cybersecurity to me makes sense. But thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, to the fiscal note, the bill refers to $3 million in FTE compensation expense being reduced. But I don't see that, and it says by 19, I don't see that in the future period as being a negative. All I see is the additional cost, and I'm curious where that went.
Mr. Oman.
Madam Chair, members, two things with that. One that I think was more addressed with the verbal change that occurred with the bill that happened here, in that, as I said earlier, we are already trying to get savings in that enterprise level, but the way the bill was originally written was across all of Minute. Well, our challenge at that point would be is we also have some projects being funded at agencies that actually require them to modernize their systems, which if we were reducing staff, but then we would have had to replace them potentially with consultants or other talent to be able to still meet that need at the agency. Now adjusting it and putting it down just to the enterprise services helps address some of that concern. Part of the challenge, and I think this is partially on, you know, us as an agency and how to reflect this properly in the fiscal note structure, is that we're a chargeback. So when you say reduce by $3 million, I don't necessarily have $3 million that I'm reducing just a budget from a general fund. What it means is I'm actually reducing my rates that are then charged out to all the other agencies that use our service. So while the bill does describe that savings there, and this is something that I know the representative ask clarification on, and I think it's something that we could add into this fiscal note better. That was the challenge we had, is how do we reflect that it is a reduction in what we charge, not a reduction in a general fund appointed to us, because we really don't get that. We're really reducing what we charge out to others.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, and to the fiscal note, I guess what I'm looking at is the fiscal note, I'm assuming, should be scored relative to the bill itself. And I agree that you're charging it back to the agencies, but then there should have been I would think, additional pages to the fiscal note, maybe not by agency, but even if it's combined, recognizing that the general fund would be affected in their operational cost if the fiscal note is indeed accurate.
Mr. Ullman?
Madam Chair, members, I would agree. That's just something that I would say we weren't quite sure how to reflect that. That is something we can go back and edit in and find the right way to reflect that in there, because you're right, as the fiscal note is written, it says reduce the cost by $3 million and to make sure it's reflected in there. So that was something we can look back to do.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess my suggestion would be, as we're approaching this bill, that maybe this fiscal note might not be accurate enough that we should be taking it into account right now, and maybe ask MMB or whoever to go back over and revise it so that we really know what it's doing, and maybe with Representative Nash input that $14 million might even change. I'm not sure, but I guess I'd have a rough time right now believing the fiscal note, because it seems like there's some things missing.
Well, Representative Vogel, I would second that about 1,000 times over, because traditionally when you do have a fiscal note, the MMB is responsible for reaching out to all of the agencies that would be impacted on that. So a lot of times when we see fiscal notes in this committee, you'll see multiple agencies listed, even agencies that are not under our purview that are listed on the fiscal note if there is an impact. So the fact that there isn't multiple agencies listed, in fact, there should be every state agency that is under MNIT's umbrella, should be listed here as the cost savings. As you mentioned in your own words, the IT reduction that you would have in the local agencies. So that should have been listed here as well. So clearly this fiscal note was not ready for prime time. I'm surprised that it was issued as an actual official fiscal note and not as a preliminary fiscal note. So there's a lot of work yet to be done on this fiscal note moving forward. And I do have some more questions on that, but I want to see, is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify to this bill? Mr. Ullman?
Madam Chair, members, and just one more to add to your comment there. Part of our confusion was obviously, again, as I mentioned, just being able to, having that verbal amendment which clarified that, that was part of our also challenge in how would we have described that in a fiscal note correctly. So that also helped us in, again, to your point, Madam Chair, we'll go back and now be able to add more detail into that.
Well, and Mr. Ullman, this isn't on you. It's the responsibility of MMB to provide us with fiscal notes, and their responsibility is to reach out to all the agencies that would be impacted by this change. So I do, since I'm not seeing any other questions at this point, I do have a couple of questions. When this whole idea first came about in 2011, so we're talking about quite a few years here that have passed in getting this consolidation done, the cost for it, probably when you got by to this time, should be zero. If you looked at the fiscal year cost estimate from the original fiscal note, it got smaller and smaller. In fact, in fiscal year 15, it was noted at $4.3 million. I imagine by this fiscal year, it should have been towards the zero amount. So I think members need to think about that as well as you're thinking about where we're at in this process. 2011 to now we're at 2017, and we still do not have full consolidation of this. And I appreciate the efforts of MNIT in trying to get this done, and we want to help you in getting the full consolidation done and applaud Representative Nash and his efforts in making this happen. So, members, any other comments? If not, Representative Nash, closing comments.
Thank you.
With that, Representative Nash renews his motion that House File 2138 be laid over for possible inclusion in the state government omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Nash. Thank you, Mr. Ullman. We've got Representative Garofalo, House File 2305. I'm going to move House File 2305 be laid over for possible inclusion in the state government finance bill. Representative Garofalo, welcome to our committee. If you can please state your name for the record and give us a presentation on your bill.
Patrick Garofalo. Good afternoon, members of the committee. What this does is this bill is a modest change to the current tax incident study that we have in the state of Minnesota. Right now, we take into account state and local sources. Oftentimes, it's asked why do we take into account local sources, and that's because there's so much interaction between state revenues, state expenditures, as well as local revenues and local expenditures. And what this bill does is it restores a provision that was added in law back in 2011, which includes federal information so that we have the federal tax incident study included in this information. The intent is clearly that we will still be able to determine what the tax incident study information is at the state and local level, but also that we'll be able to combine federal revenue data so we have a more full and complete picture of who is paying for government, who's paying government taxes and who is paying government services. And that is the completion of my testimony, Madam Chair.
Okay. Is there anybody that wishes to testify on this bill? Mr. Cummings, please join us. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record.
Cookies.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I had cookies for all of the bills that I needed to give testimony with, maybe concerns about, that's a lot of cookies. Yeah. That's a tremendous amount of cookies.
You brought some great cookies to tax committee.
Are those from you?
Madam Chair, the comment at the tax committee was that I was neglecting the tax committee in favor of the Senate. And so I offered an apology this morning to Chair Davids to let him know that, you know, the tax committee is always first in my heart.
They were still warm in the box.
Yes.
Yeah, well done. Yeah. Bonus points for that.
Yeah, and bonus points for not bringing them here.
Mr. Cummings.
Madam Chair, members, did I state my name? If not, I'm Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Do you ever wake up in the middle of the night saying, I'm Paul Cummings?
I don't know. I may have. So I haven't been to this committee before, so I'm happy to be here. I reached out to Representative Garofalo yesterday, and I do have some brief comments. The Tax Incidence Report is one of the products that our Tax Research Division of the Department of Revenue produces. Seems everyone can take something from the report, changes to effective tax rates, changes to the regressivity of the system, impacts of the economy and tax law changes. We were one of the first states in the nation to have a tax incidence report, and our report is one of the best. In fact, as other states have put together their tax incidence reports, they use different methods to put together their reports. States from across the country use the Minnesota model. Some states do, putting their tax incidence report together. In fact, one consultant tried to sell Minnesota on using their model, and we asked, well, what model are you using? And they're saying, well, the Minnesota model. And we respectfully said, well, we're good. Enough bragging, Madam Chair, to the bill. The tax incidence study does a good job outlining the taxes that are under the control of Minnesota policymakers. Federal tax incidence is not under the jurisdiction of Minnesota lawmakers and could confuse the types of decisions under the control of the Minnesota legislature. Some federal taxes are not the same same tax base as Minnesota taxes. The definition of income for federal tax presentations would likely need to include the employer share of Social Security taxes. It's widely believed that they are borne on the taxpayer, which is not included in the definition of income in past studies. So this would make it difficult to combine federal tax burdens with state and local tax burdens. I've heard some say that this is needed to provide a complete picture of the tax burdens on Minnesota taxpayers, but that's not what could be presented. There are many examples of the parts of burdens that we would not be able to model or include, and those are including income tax paid to other states and income earned in another state, sales and excise taxes on purchases made while in another state, burden on Minnesota stockholders of corporate and business property taxes levied in other states, taxes on oil and gas and other minerals levied by other states that affect the final product's price in Minnesota. So, Madam Chair, with the inability to combine the two definitions of income and knowing that this report wouldn't show the total tax burden, as well as the fact that these taxes are not under the jurisdiction of the Minnesota legislature, I'm not as convinced of its usefulness. In fact, it could give the false impression of tax burden, which is, I think, a goal that we're not, which we wouldn't want to achieve that goal of giving a false impression. But if this bill moves forward, Madam Chair, we look forward to working with you and Representative Garofalo and members and staff, and we thank you for the opportunity to come before this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Chair Garofalo. Did you want to respond?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, I think it's important that Minnesotans understand that those who make higher incomes pay a higher percentage of their income in taxes, and that those who make lower incomes pay a lower percentage of their income in taxes. And in order to reflect the what is factually accurate data, we need to have a complete picture of that information. And, again, this is something that was in law in 2011 and I think would be wisely restored this session.
All right. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill? Mr. Cummings?
Madam Chair, if it's helpful, I am with the Department of Revenue, and I can state that the federal government does have a progressive tax system. If that's helpful.
Chair Garofalo?
I have completed my testimony.
All right. Okay. Questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cummings, just briefly, what is the purpose of the study anyway? I mean, why is it done?
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, under statute, it talks about the overall incidence of income, sales, and excise taxes and property taxes. Overall income distribution using an incidence system-wide measure by income class types and deciles and other taxpayer characteristics. You know, one of the issues that comes up in tax incidence is that there are many different types of tax. And I think that Representative Garofalo is talking about federal taxes. Under the jurisdiction of the Minnesota legislature, there's property tax and sales tax, many types of special types of taxes, corporate taxes, income taxes. And so as we're thinking about what types of taxes do people pay relative to their income, many of us think that we just sort of immediately think of the income tax in Minnesota. But people pay many types of taxes, and the tax incidence report helps to illustrate what types of taxes people pay as an effective tax rate. And it also talks about tax burdens. So, you know, sometimes some of the taxes that even you may think of as one type, the corporate income tax, you know, the current model that the Department of Revenue uses shows the corporate tax is a regressive tax. You know, and so that's trying to show the different tax burdens upon Minnesota taxpayers. I'm not sure if that's helpful.
Representative Johnson.
I guess just to be more clear what I'm looking for, who is the audience that this study is for? Is it for legislators to do better work in their legislation, or is it for the general public to have some perspective on tax policy, or is it for all those things? That's what I'm not clear on.
Mr. Cummings.
Representative Johnson and Madam Chair, the report is requested by the legislature under statute. The audience formally is the legislature, but it is reported publicly on our website.
Okay. Thank you, Madam
Chair. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Short questions. The first one, I remember when, you know, 2011, the change went through, and I remember always seeing these little cards, plastic cards, with actually a graph of the incidents. I don't remember ever seeing one that included what was in the 2011. Did the department ever generate one which basically was by this method before from that past legislation? The other thing is, if those tremendous amount of cookies we were talking about were real, would they be deductible as a business expense?
Mr. Cummings.
To the first question, Mr. Chair, I think, Madam Chair and Representative Kwan, the cards that I think you may have referenced, the cards were produced by the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, so that is not a production of the Department of Revenue, and so I don't know what types of cards they produced. And, Madam Chair, no, the cookies would not be expensable as a business expense. That was just something personally I did this morning at the bakery. So,
members, any other questions? Representative Garofalo, I like this piece of legislation. Having served on the tax committee, I know that it's a useful tool as a legislator in finding out what the full impact is on our citizens. And so I appreciate your efforts in putting this forward. Do you have any closing comments that you want to add?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. With that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2305 be laid over for possible inclusion in the State Government Finance Bill. And thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You've been so patient. Thank you. I'm going to move House File 1628 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Keel, two-year bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yes, House File 1628 came to me through my counties, and I have with me Matt Hilgart, and I'm going to have him explain exactly what the background is on this and what we're asking to do here.
Mr. Hilgart, welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Members of the committee, my name is Matt Hilgart. I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties. The Association of Minnesota Counties represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. I want to first thank Representative Keel for bringing this bill forward in such a timely manner. I know that some of her counties are afflicted by the issue in front of you today, but as are other Minnesota counties. AMC was notified of this issue a few years ago when we had a couple of our southern counties involved in some pipeline valuation disputes regarding Alliance Pipeline. And they were, in the end, forced back to pay several hundred thousand dollars, and it was a struggle for their communities. And so they brought this up at one of our annual meetings and said, you know, we're concerned about this. We're worried going forward. I have to say, I have to give Department of Revenue credit in that they were very responsive to our emails, and we met multiple times with Department of Revenue commissioners, staff, to kind of go over our concerns and ask questions. Why is this happening? What's going on with the rule, et cetera. Since that time, we have seen more and more counties reaching out to the Association of Minnesota Counties on this issue. In fact, in just this year, this session alone, I've heard from Stearns County, St. Louis County, Kitson, Clearwater, Polk, Red Lake, and even today, Rice County notified me of an issue as well. We also have talked and heard support from other local government organizations, Minnesota Association of Townships, League of Minnesota Cities, Minnesota Association of County Officers, and the Minnesota Intercounty Association, sharing our concerns and support of Representative Keel's bill. I'll provide a very short background, and I'm sure Department of Revenue will also be able to provide some background on this. A few years back, or maybe a little bit more than a few, there was a new rule implemented through Rule 8100. Several pages thick, has very complicated terms and terminology and methodology in it, but it was basically a new way to assess utility companies. In the state of Minnesota, counties do not assess utility companies. They cross jurisdictional lines. They're very complex properties. So the Department of Revenue assesses those utility companies. This new rule seems to have created a lot of frustration, particularly with gas or utility companies, Alliance, Merck, Enbridge, etc. What happens then is that these companies go to court, and they bring in multi-years of tax assessments. Either they go to court and either they win their battle and get a reduced value, or they settle with the Department of Revenue and it's still a reduced value. I do want to say, though, even if we're settling in court, what we see are those settlements are regarding large valuations. So in case of like Stearns County, which I believe had CenterPoint Energy have a dispute, you know, we're talking $750 million worth of taxable value. And even a 10% reduction in value, and I think it was a 12.9% reduction that they had, results in, you know, for 1 year, a value difference of $98 million. Now, that's not the tax that would have to go back, but that's the value. And so the reduced tax portion can still be several millions of dollars. And so what will happen then is when there's a settlement, the Department of Revenue will issue a utility refund order to these counties and say, you know what, this is what we settled, or this is what the court decided, and this is what you owe back. The counties will take out their share and then tell the cities, townships, school districts, all the taxing jurisdictions what their share of that is. And that's why you see kind of all collectively local governments being impacted by the issue in front of you. Some counties have a better capacity or capability to pay back these refunds. If you're a county with a large tax base or, frankly, a metro county, this might not hit you as much. Or if the utility doesn't represent as large of a percentage of your tax base, then you might have the ability to pay back more. But in counties that you'll hear from today who drove all the way down from Clearwater, Monome, and Red Lake, the percentage of their tax base that is utilities is very large. I think in one case is 50% of their tax base. And we have one instance where Red Lake has, I think it's a $2.8 million levy. That's their county levy. And what they have been told by the utility company in their region is that they are confident that they will be receiving an order for $3 to $3.5 million. So more than the entire county levy itself. To that case, what do we do? And that is why we're here in front of you today. Our commissioners are unified with the concern and the consistency of the rule, but we also feel that this isn't our rule. This is not our assessment, and this is not kind of our actors or our attorneys that are going to court or settling. And so we've approached the Department of Revenue. We've had communications with them again this year. We've thrown out a couple options. One in particular was a five-year payback window opportunity. We don't think that solves the problem. And what we've heard from our counties is that with the interest accumulated, it's cheaper for them to take it all out of their reserves up front or use a bonding authority to pay it up front instead of accumulating interest over those 5 years. In the end, their taxpayers would actually pay more than just doing it right away. But we're obviously interested in a long-term solution. And so we come today, and there are two testifiers who've driven a long way, so if you don't mind, I'll probably defer to them to tell their particular county stories. But that is the very rough 3,000 or 30,000-foot kind of view of the land from a county's perspective. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hilgart. Stay close. I've got John LaRoe and Alan Paulson.
Yes. John, it's Mr. Larrell.
Larrell. Oh, I'm sorry. If it's not Anderson, I have trouble.
It doesn't matter.
Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
My name is John Larrell, and I represent Red Lake County.
And feel free to cozy up to that mic. There's a white noise that I have a hard time hearing, so I apologize.
Okay. Yeah, well, okay. My name is John Larrell, and I'm from Red Lake County.
Okay.
On the commission.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Paulson. I'm a fourth-generation farmer rancher in Clearwater County, and I'm also the county auditor. Okay. Clearwater County, for a reference point, is the home of Itasca State Park and the source of the Mississippi River. So.
Been there many times. Love it. Commissioner Larrell, do you want to start out?
Okay. We have several pipelines that go through. And according to Enbridge, what Chris told us is he said if you take a football goal, and his number is right now $3.5 million that we owe. The state says we owe nothing. You know, somewhere in between that is where it's going to go. He claims it's going to be a lot closer to him than to the state. Now, I don't know. I mean, we don't know at all. But as you heard, our levy is just about $3 million. So we're hurting there. And then besides that, when they overcharged Enbridge, that raised the taxes that we were getting from Enbridge. So our local government aid or our county government program aid went down. Our program aid this year was $38,000, just about $39,000. But it's dropped every year that I've been a commissioner, and this is my 11th year. So it's really going down. And then besides that, there was two other pipes that were supposed to be in the ground now. The pipeliner or the sandpiper. And that stalled. And then, in fact, we don't know if it'll go again. But there's been a lot of investment into it, so we're hoping that it will. But then line three is old, and it's in poor shape. And so they want to put a new line in for that. Well, they're band-aiding it all over the place. So we got crews over there even during the winter working on it. And the pressure is way low on it. So it just isn't, it doesn't generate a whole lot of revenue because it's not doing much. Mm-hmm. So we're getting hit hard with the cost of the overpay, plus we're not getting in on two pipes that should be paying into us now and aren't.
Okay. Mr. Paulson, did you want to add, too?
Yes.
Or Commissioner Paulson?
Valuations come in two forms, local taxpayers, or local properties assessed by the local assessor, and utilities are appraised by the Department of Revenue, and those values are certified to us. We have opportunity in June each year of Board Equalization to hear abatements and ask people, ask what their values. We can do that on a local level. Utilities, we have no opportunity to hear that, whatever. And so when we find out that these values are going on back to 2012, those tax dollars have been budgeted for, levied for, collected, mm-hmm. appropriated out, and in most cases, I'm sure, spent. And of that, in Clearwater County, we send $3 million to the state of Minnesota in property tax that we collect for them as well. So mm-hmm. so it's hard for us to look at where we're going to come with money to do this. Our the worst-case scenario for Clearwater County is $7.2 million in abatement. Our levy is 6.8, and we're very conservative, and we work hard to keep our levy low. Last year, we did have a 2.6 increase in our levy, but we've been known to have 0%, and worked hard at that. It's the concern for us that it's not our value from the Department of Revenue, and it's not our role to do that valuation, and it's not our settlement, and we don't think we should be responsible for those dollars back to the taxpayer. Okay. In this case, Enbridge.
Members, any questions for these testifiers? Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Auditor Paulson, do you know offhand what the average household income is in Clearwater County?
Auditor?
I can't tell you for sure, but we have a large high percent of low-income people. We have a high percent of elderly. We have tribal property, and we have very little commercial property. If our net tax capacity in our county, 54% is paid by utility companies, pipelines, transmission lines, gas lines, and railroad. 22% are paid by ag properties, 20% is paid by residential, and 4% is paid by commercial seasonal property or commercial industrial properties. So,
Representative Green?
You can finish if you want.
I just want to say, so you can see any shift in valuation would, from half of the valuation of our county is paid by utility companies. And we're glad they're there. They've been very good for employment for our county. They've been good stewards of the land and property, and we appreciate having them there. And we as taxpayers, I'm a taxpayer as well, and I appreciate them paying taxes in our county.
Okay.
I want to say for the record, because it's been a while since I checked, but the last I checked, it was like in the low to mid-30s. Do you have any idea today what portion of Clearwater County land is non-taxable?
About 35% of our property is in tax forfeit, so that's not taxed. We do get full payments, but it's used by everybody in the state of Minnesota and elsewhere. It's used for hunting, recreation, and things like that. There's very poor utilities and roads in a lot of those areas, so it would be not feasible to get them back on the as market taxpayer probably.
Representative Green?
Madam Chair, are we going to have the Department of Revenue come back down?
Yes.
Okay. I'll wait till they come down.
Okay. Any other comments, fellows?
I just like to just remind you once again that we have no input in that valuation, yet we're being saddled with this abatement of $7.2 million, and it's there's no way our county can do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else that wishes, or Mr. Commissioner?
No. Well, I was just going to say that a lot of cities and townships, then they all pay too. You know, some cities like Plummer is in our district, and it's just got a new pumping station. And I don't know what it did to it, but I know I talked to the mayor, and he said this year was the first year that they went in on the tax roll, and his taxes went down $200. Mm. Well, that's probably a quarter of what his taxes were. So
right.
So it could make quite a difference. You know.
an auditor?
Because they also in Clearwater County, it does value, it affects two school districts, four townships severely, and one small village. Okay.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for making the drive to testify. I really appreciate it. We've got the department. Can you join us, please? And is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill? Oh, come forward. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sewell. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Townships. I'll be happy to keep this committee warm in my heart, but if I brought you warm cookies, we'd violate the ethics laws. So, unfortunately, I can only bring you my testimony. We share the concerns of AMC and the counties that you've heard from already. This is a potentially huge financial burden on the local governments for something we have no control over. In the past, I've heard people refer to that if the state were to reimburse the locals, there'd be unjust enrichment to us. And that's absolutely the furthest thing from the truth. Unjust enrichment would be if we were to get the levy from the utilities and get reimbursed from the state and keep both. That would be some unjust enrichment. The idea of unjust enrichment is when you actually get money you're not entitled to. Now, you could say that's what's happening here. The problem is the money we're getting is the state's assessed value. Right? The money that we're entitled to at the local level is the levy that's been certified, the levy that's gone through the process at us, our level that was approved just the other night at the town meetings. So that's the money that we're entitled to. That's the money that we need to function and have the budget for. Then that is distributed all, of course, through the assessed values on the properties. So that in this case, the utilities are getting the value that's been assessed by the state. When they win the judgments back, we're forced to make the repayment. Now that leaves us with a shortfall. There is no unjust enrichment. There's a shortage. We actually lose that money. Now that may force us to borrow money and go into debt to make up the shortfall. It may require us to borrow money to pay back because it's already been spent by the time we get the judgments saying that, hey, the state overassessed and the state settled in for an agreement that we have no voice in. So in no way is this unjust enrichment to the locals. This is simply the state owning up to a mistake. Well, nobody's pointing fingers and saying why the mistake is made. It's just the courts have decided a mistake was made in the evaluation. The evaluation is made by the state. The state needs to own up and keep us whole. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sewell. Any questions for him? Thank you. We've got the Department of Revenue. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record.
Sure. My name is John Foxham. I'm the Assistant Director in the Property Tax Division for the Department of Revenue.
Say that last name again, please.
Foxham.
Foxham. I swear you guys do this on purpose to me. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Foxham.
My name is Cynthia Rowley. I'm the Director of Property Tax with the Department of Revenue.
And it's
Rowley.
Rowley. All right. I will do my best. And who would like to speak first?
Well, we appreciate the opportunity to be here, Madam Chair, and share our perspective. Our mission at the Department of Revenue is to work together to fund Minnesota's future, and our vision is that everyone pays the right amount, no more, no less. Property tax is state-assessed property includes complicated property that you've heard about today, and our job is to determine the market value for those organizations and those facilities. And that is what our state-assessed property individuals do. And then they apportion that market value to each of the counties and jurisdictions across the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Klotzine, did you want to add anything? I've got some questions, Ms. Rowley. So it sounds like you're having a problem with this rule. So has the department made adjustments so that we don't see this continuing to happen? And just, if you don't know the answer, I'm going to ask Mr. Hilgard as well. But I want to know what's the magnitude, because I'm sensing this is bigger than the Titanic. So can you tell me what are the efforts that the Department of Revenue is doing, given that you've had lawsuits on this, and it sounds like it's more than one?
Well, the Department of Revenue does, Madam Chair, does give all of these companies an opportunity to provide information about the state of their industry. As a matter of fact, last week we held a fall forum where we invited these companies in to share what's going on in their industry. We also, a little bit later in the year, will publish a cap rate study, and the cap rate is an important component of establishing the valuations for these companies. And we will invite comment from the industries as well, and we will take that into account before establishing a final cap rate. Then there is an appeal process to us as well. And then, of course, the final step is to file in tax court.
So have you, I assume that you've done this prior to this rule being implemented. And so what was the feedback that you got during that process when you first implemented the rule itself that is causing problems for these lawsuits? What feedback did the utilities give to you at that moment, and did they appeal at that point as well?
Well, the standard rulemaking procedures were followed, and so, again, when the rules were proposed, there was an opportunity for public comment and public hearing. The hearing was held, and those comments were taken into consideration, but I was not in this role at that time, so I cannot comment on the specifics.
Mr. Klotzim, were you around at that time, or?
Madam Chair, I was not. However, I want to clarify a little bit, you know, because I think in this discussion we're focusing on the rule, and I know that Mr. Hilgard characterized this as a problem as a rule. However, I don't think that companies petitioning their values is something that is directly related to the rule. Or
what is it related to, Mr. Bob?
It may be simply that they are making a business decision to petition how much they pay in taxes, and they're making a calculated decision on whether they have the resources and the means to go forward with the tax court appeal case.
Well, let me ask you this, Mr. Klotzim or Ms. Rowley. When the courts are making the judgments and then saying these counties have to pay, what is the decision of the court? What are they saying? This is the reason why.
Madam Chair, when you go into court, and the tax court will look at all the facts pertinent to a valuation for a property, and they'll do what is called a de novo appraisal. So they'll look at it with fresh eyes, and they'll take into account the evidence that's presented from expert witnesses, both on our side and then from the county, and make a decision in relation to that evidence which items are the most relevant and hold the most weight.
Well, and I get that process. Maybe Mr. Hilgard, can you join us? Because I want to get to the I understand the process of what the court goes through, but I want to know what is the citation that they are giving of this is why this law, this rule is not working, and this is why the state is going to have to require the counties to pay back the money. So is there a common theme that we're talking about? Mr. Hilgard, can
Chair Anderson, members of the committee, I am not an attorney, and I am not too familiar with Rule 8100. I've read it a couple times. I know it has terms like economic obsolescence, which is always a sticking point amongst the Department of Revenue and companies on what that means. We're being told two different things here as counties. We're being told it's not the rule. In fact, in one of our meetings, we were told, don't worry, you know, new rules can change behaviors. They might try to test the rule, but over a certain time, we believe that these cases will go down. We're not seeing that, but that at the same time, we're being told by the utility companies who have been talking to our counties, who they work very closely with at a local level, that the type of valuation is unheard of compared to how other states do it, and that by and large, compared to other neighboring states, they are paying a lot more, and that they do believe the problem is the rule. And so I want to be fair that there are two different perspectives here. You're hearing from the department that the rule isn't the problem and that perhaps it's business behavior, but we're also hearing that the rule is the problem. So I feel bad that I'm not able to answer that completely, but we're in this perspective where, you know, we'd like an answer. We'd like predictability. Now, changing the rule might also have adverse effects of lowering taxes, which would mean lowering revenues for our communities. However, we think that we should be able to find some middle ground where, yes, lowering some of those taxes might be acceptable. However, if we can depend on stability, that is the prime. I mean, we can't go back. We can't be notified in 2017 saying, oh, by the way, here's three court cases from 2012, 13, and 14, and you owe $1.2 million back after we've already budgeted, levied, and planned our services out for several years. So what we're asking for is consistency and some sort of dependability on the role.
So, Ms. Rowley, help me out. So given that this is taking place, you're going to be publishing this cap rate study. Have you looked at what other states do that don't have this as a problem?
Madam Chair, we have looked at some general information at states around us, but we are not able to get all of the detailed information that allows us a true comparison.
Why?
It's not readily available.
Okay. Well, let's do this. I think it would be helpful for me going back. I'm just going to start with the rule, since we'll start with that piece. I'd be interested in seeing, when you were going through the rulemaking process, what was the comments from the utilities to the department. So their comments that they provided, and then any appeal motions that they made, because I'd like to see what that is, to see if they give an indication of how we can do this better. But I'd also like to see the department actually dig further into other states, and I'm sure the counties could probably help out in providing maybe some examples on it as well of other states that they could help us, direct us to, or if this is where they're not having these kind of problems. Because you can see how this is problematic. I can't imagine you have some of these small counties, they're having to pay back millions, and I'm sure Representative Keel can speak to that quite well. So that would be a serious problem. Those are my thoughts for now, but I got Representative Johnson. You have any comments you want to make?
No, I'll pass.
Okay. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify on this at all? Members, any other questions? Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to ask if, kind of along the same line as the Chair, as if there's any plans on the department's agenda to try to fix this, but I think I got my answer that you don't believe there's a problem. So I suppose there's a problem with your rule. And I do want to point out that we see this time and again with our agencies. And, and I hear time and again that these are experts and that we have to take their word on this, and yet they make rules and they say it's an open process, but most people don't know. It's not like coming here for hearings. You publish them, they go out to a few people, and some people know it, some people don't. And from what I've gathered from the people who have been to these hearings, most of what they say never gets taken into consideration anyway. The rule goes through. And this is very disturbing for me. I do have a portion of Clearwater County, and I'm telling you, it's hitting them very hard. And as far as the rule not being the problem, the rule is the problem, because that's when the problem came about. And I would think that, from what I gather, this went in 2012, and we started seeing problems. There should have been something done immediately instead of waiting to this point where we're this far behind. And I'm pretty disgusted over this, and I hope that the agency will be open-minded to try and go back and try to fix this in the future.
Ms. Rowley, any comments?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Green. The department is very willing to work with the counties, with Matt, and others to take a look at potential solutions and options to deal with this, which would not preclude a change to the rule at this point.
Yep. Representative Ugo?
Madam Chair, more or less a comment along the lines of Representative Green and yours. Obviously there's a problem. Obviously, right now it's being resolved through the court system in all of this. And other states, I mean, these pipeline companies that do business all over the country know what's going on, why Minnesota is so out of line with this rulemaking and everything else, and they're prevailing in the courts. So I think it's really imperative that you take a look at exactly what other states are doing. and I'm sure there's some collegiality among your peers at other states, and we need to take a look at this thing and get it straightened around, because with these small counties, it's an impossible situation, and I think we should do it as soon as possible.
And Mr. Hilgart, can you help me out and get a list of counties that have been impacted, and then just the timeline and the amounts? So the ones that have already had to pay back, and then the ones that are under threat of lawsuit as well. Mr. Hilgart.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy. What we would do for that process is put together a survey. It might take some time. However, I might solicit Department of Revenue's help, too, because they would probably have, they do the notices,
okay,
which would probably give me a more proper list of folks that would be impacted.
Mr. Ali, you'll help out? Thank you. Representative Keel, any other comments?
Madam Chair, members, no. I just, this is something we need to work out and bring some stability for our counties.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1628 be laid over for possible inclusion in the State Government Finance Committee. Thank you, members. Appreciate it. With that, members, I'm meeting at 9 in room 200. And with that, we are adjourned.